Ativa.
Ativa.
Very much. Part to who? Of the husband. Vrata
dharma.
Vow to serve him. Nishtya.
By determination.
Shushrushya.
By serving.
Cha.
Also.
Asha. Like the great saintly sages. Deha.
Body.
Yatraya.
Living condition.
Na.
Did not.
Avindata.
Perceive.
Artim.
Any difficulty.
Parikashita
api.
Although transformed to become lean and thin.
Sa.
She.
Aprayakara.
Very pleasing.
Sparshana.
Touching.
Mana.
Engaged.
Nirvitaki.
Pleasure. Translation. Although she was not accustomed to such difficulties, Queen Archie followed her husband in the regulative principles of living in the forest like great sages. She lay down on the ground and ate only fruits, flowers, and leaves. And because she was not fit for these activities, she became frail and thin. Yet because of the pleasure she derived in serving her husband, she did not feel any difficulties. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. The words, Bhartur, Vrata Dharma, Nishtaya, indicate that a woman's duty or religious principle is to serve her husband in all conditions. In Vedic civilization, a man is taught from the beginning of his life to become a brahmachari, then an ideal grahastha, then vanaprastha, then sannyasi, and the wife is taught just to follow the husband strictly in all conditions of life. After the period of brahmacharya, a man accepts a householder's life, and the woman is also taught by her parents to be a chaste wife. Thus, when a girl and boy are united, both are trained for a life dedicated to a higher purpose. The boy is trained to execute his duty in accordance with the higher purpose of life, and the girl is trained to follow him. The chaste wife's duty is to keep her husband pleased in household life in all respects. And when the husband retires from family life, she is to go to the forest and adopt the life of vanaprastha or vanavasi. At that time, the wife is to follow her husband and take care of him, just as she took care of him in household life. But when the husband takes the renounced order of life, namely sannyas, the wife is to return home and become a saintly woman, setting an example for her children and daughters-in-law and showing them how to live a life of austerity. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyasa's wife, Vishnu Priya Devi, although only 16 years old, also took the vow of austerity due to her husband's leaving home. She chanted her beads, and after finishing one round, she collected one grain of rice. In this way, as many grounds as she chanted, she would receive the same number of rice grains and then cook them and so take prasad. This is called austerity. Even today in India, widows or women whose husbands have taken sannyas follow the principles of austerity even though they live with their children. Pitu Maharaj's wife, Archie, was steadily determined to execute the duty of a wife. And while her husband was in the forest, she followed him in eating only fruits and leaves and lying down on the ground. Since a woman's body is considerably more delicate than a man's, Queen Archie became very frail and thin, parikarshita. When one engages in austerity, his body generally becomes lean and thin. Becoming fat is not a very good qualification in spiritual life, because a person who is engaged in spiritual life must reduce the comforts of the body, namely eating, sleeping, and mating, to a minimum. Although Queen Archie became very thin from living in the forest according to regulative principles, She was not unhappy, for she was enjoying the honor of serving her great husband. So Ativa Vartu Rata Dharma Nishtiya Shushushya Charsha Deha Yatraya Navinda Tartim Parikarashita Pisa Prayaskara Sparshana Mana Nivritihi. So Om Ganat Samarandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there's many topics we can talk about in relationship to this person. I can talk about a few of them. First one, of course, is this principle of chastity of a lady towards her husband. And this makes a woman actually very, very powerful. Now, at the end of the class, I'll talk about like the modern day, you know, what's practical. Okay, so don't worry, you ladies. So, it makes a woman very powerful. You have these stories in the Vedic literatures about women who became so powerful they could basically defeat the demigods. Just like yesterday, Palananda Maharaj was talking about how the sun appears every morning on schedule. Well, there's one exception to that. And that was because of a lady. And that exception was mentioned in the Markandeya Purana. There was this lady who was so faithful to her husband. I'm not saying we should do this. But anyway, her husband wanted to associate with a prostitute, so she worked very hard and got enough money. And her husband also had leprosy. So, you know, I guess the price was much higher at that particular point. So she worked very hard and did that, and then her husband actually realized how chaste his wife was, and he didn't actually go to the prostitute. But on the way back, her husband inadvertently touched this great sage, Markandeya Rishi. And sometimes sages have a little temper on them. In other words, they get angry. Generally, sages should be doing this, but anyway. So this sage, he had a little bit of a temper. And so he cursed this man, because he had leprosy, you know, so he touches you with leprosy, you go, So he got so angry, and he said to this man that you're going to die before the rising of the sun the next day. And so his wife naturally said, the sun's not going to rise, guess what? And by the power of her chastity, she stopped Suryadev in his path. And the sun didn't rise until there was an arrangement made that her husband could live. You know, some mitigation of the curse. So that's how powerful she was. And of course, Suryadev was happy because he had a vacation. And there's a whole story in the Ramayana about this, how Bali was born and Sugriva was born during that vacation. Anyway, we're not going to tell that story because it has nothing to do with the chastity of women. It has something else to do with some unusual occurrences. So, anyway, so that shows how powerful she was by that chastity. And then you have Gandhari, who, her husband, of course, was born blind. Her husband's name was Dhritarashtra. I think everybody knows a lot of the story. Her husband was born blind, and when she decided to get married to him, she thought, I shouldn't be any better than my husband. Because generally, because of male ego, we're talking about yesterday, Mars mentioning men are from Mars, women from Venus. There's a book like that. You know? So, because of male ego, you know, the woman is superior to the husband and manifests that. It can make a man a little upset. Because of his Mars, he's not balanced. So anyway, so she has to act like she's not superior. So what she did, she bound her eyes, because her husband was born blind. And she voluntarily embraced blindness throughout almost most of her life. And she became so powerful. There's two instances, actually several instances, that illustrated her power. One is that Duryodhana, he wanted to become invulnerable. So his mother had the ability, if she looked at any part of his body, that his body would become invulnerable, means nothing could harm it, like stronger than steel, like Superman or something like that. So his mother said, all right, come to me this day. It was in the middle of the battle, Kurukshetra battle, one of the days of the battle of Kurukshetra. Come to me this day, but be wearing your birthday suit. You know what a birthday suit is? That means what you wear when you're born. So in other words, naked. But then our old friend Krishna had a trick. He knew that this was going to happen, and so he sort of stopped Duryodhana when he was walking naked to his mother's house, a mother's tent, actually. And he said, what are you doing walking around in the camp naked? I mean, it really wasn't a rainbow festival at that time. You know, generally, it just wasn't acceptable. And he said, well, you know, my mother asked to see me naked. He said, well, at least you should cover, you know, the middle part, wear a gumshoe or something. And so he walked to his mother's tent and he said to his mother, I'm here. You know, he followed Krishna's advice, which from his perspective, it wasn't a good idea. And so it's not nice Krishna gives advice. Well, it's always for everyone's welfare, but you may not always appreciate Krishna's advice. So he followed Krishna's advice and he said to his mother, I'm here. His mother removed her blindfold and every part of his body became like steel. You know, it couldn't be pierced except for, or hurt around the midriff where he was wearing the little gumshoe or the little cloth, whatever it was. And of course she got really angry. She said, why did this happen? And he said, Krishna told me. That's Krishna. He's interfering every time we make a plan. He just interferes with these plans, you know. So she had a little anger with Krishna, which is later manifested in another curse, another manifestation of her potency, which was after the battle of Kurukshetra. There's two things that happened, actually. One is Yudhisthira didn't want to approach his aunt Gandhari because, you know, he's really afraid of her. And he had very, very beautiful toes. You know this story? Yeah, his toes. I mean, his whole body was beautiful. And so, but especially the toes. Toes were very, I don't know what beautiful toes mean, but anyway. That's what the Mahabharata says, so don't blame me. But anyway, they had beautiful toes, and then Gandhari was so angry, and she somehow looked under her blindfold. And she saw his toes and they curled up, became like Serpinaca's nails at that point. So his toes became very ugly, just because of her looking at them. And then the final thing was, I mean, she was so upset with Krishna after the battle that she cursed Krishna. And she was able to curse Krishna that in 30 some odd years from now, speaking, that she said, your family, just like my family was destroyed in a fratricidal war, your family is going to be destroyed in a fratricidal war. And of course, this was Krishna's plan. Believe me, nothing happens unless Krishna allows it. Isn't it? Savasya chaham brihisanavishto matasmithi rgyanamapalanam cha. You know, he's in everyone's heart, giving everyone intelligence, remembrance, forgetfulness, and also yantra rudani maya. He's in everyone's heart and he's directing the wanderings of all living entities seated on a machine of the material energy. So therefore Krishna allowed it to happen, but really that's what happened. The Krishna's dynasty, actually they had a big fight. The other dynasty, they fought with each other, they got intoxicated with these canes and drinking rice wine. They knocked each other off. So basically her curse came true. Just think how powerful, isn't it? Wow. How powerful. That's more powerful than the biggest sannyasi in our movement. Or Chase Lynch. Just be scared. And then, see if I can tell any other stories. Yeah, there's other stories like this. Savitri and Satyavan story is one of the famous stories. Prabhupada actually told that story. That once upon a time, many, many years ago, there was this king, Ashvapati, and he was worshipping Lord Brahma. And Ashvapati Ashwapati. Ashwa means the owner of the horse, basically, Ashwapati. That's interesting, isn't it? Well, these names are actually interesting. There's like the wife calls the husband Pati, my lord, Pati Dave. In the Vedic culture, actually, the wife would call the husband Pati Dave or Swami or Swami, meaning not sannyasi, but master, right? And the husband would call the wife Priya. Nowadays, they just call him any sort of name. Hey, Joe. There's no more romance left. It's all, you know,
hey, Joe, hey, Mary, shut your mouth.
You know, so anyway, there's no more sweetness in relationships. So Ashwapati, he wanted to have a son. And he worshipped Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma blessed him, you'll have a son. But actually what happened was that a daughter was born. And her name was Savitri. And she was so beautiful. But as a father, he was very concerned with finding the proper daughter, a proper husband for her. And he looked all over and she was so beautiful. No one wanted to marry her because she was so beautiful. It's interesting, isn't it? Because Chanakya Pandit says a beautiful wife is an enemy at home, right? For various reasons. One, you'll probably be controlled by her. Another reason is that other people will be wanting to kidnap her, like Sita Devi was kidnapped by Ravana. So if you have a beautiful wife, those of you who are thinking of getting married, marry someone who cooks nicely. That's more important. So, apart from that issue, advising the brahmacharis. So what happened is that she couldn't find a husband. The father said, basically, it's your responsibility now to find a husband. So she, not that she wandered around and went to the bars like people do nowadays to find husbands. I mean, that's generally like, or they go on the internet, you know, VaishnavaMarriage.com or something like that. And then they discover the person who put a picture up of some handsome man. It looks like a rakshasa instead of a man. Anyway, let me find him. So she actually investigated, went to the Brahmins, asked the Brahmins questions, and went around with his soldiers like that. And it took her a whole year. And she finally found someone she thought, you know, she fell in love with someone. Gave her heart to someone. That was Satyavan. And Satyavan, anyway, I'll tell a little bit more about him. So she went back home, told her father that, I want to marry Satyavan. And Narada Muni happened to be there at the same time. And the father died. She went to tell him. Her father, Ashwapati, said, what do you think about this match? I mean, sometimes you can ask sannyasis if they're expert in astrology about their matches, right? Don't ask me, but Mara's expert. What is that? Matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a fine, catch me a catch. So, actually, traditionally in the villages, there was a matchmaker. It wasn't a sannyasi, it was a householder. So, anyway, so they asked Narada Muni, who was expert? Narada Muni's basically, you know, he's a pure devotee, so he has this insight. What do you think of this Satyavan? And Narada Muni said, he's really nice, really qualified, but I don't think it's a good idea. And they said, why? If he's so qualified. They said, well, he's supposed to die exactly 1 year from today. They said, 1 year from today, he's supposed to die. It's not going to be a long marriage. But she was determined. I must get married to him. So the marriage was arranged. They had the ceremony, the three-day ceremony. The interesting thing is that her father, Satyavan's father, his name was Jumatsena. And Jumatsena was blind. He was a king before. And he was blind, but he was kicked out of his kingdom by the prime minister because he was blind. I mean, it's important for a king to be able to see because a king is supposed to fight in the battle, and he can't really do that well fighting in the battle if he can't see. So he was kicked out, and he was living in the forest. And, of course, that means that Satyavan was living in the forest, too. Okay, so then she, being a very chaste lady, went to live with her husband and her husband's father and mother in the forest. And she was keeping an eye on the calendar because she knew that Satyavan was supposed to die after a whole year. So she was counting down the days. And then 3 days before he was supposed to die, she started fasting and doing special austerities. And then in the day he was supposed to die, she said to her father-in-law, I want to go with him to the forest, because he would regularly go to the forest to chop down wood and get things for his parents, the vegetables, the forest vegetables and everything. And they said, all right, you never asked before, but you can go with him. So while they were in the forest, he had sort of like a heart attack and died, because he was supposed to. That was in the stars, you know, the astrology. Supposed to die. Just like I asked Maharaj the other day, when am I supposed to die? And he said, someday. I said, no. I don't want to die. And he said, you have to chant Hare Krishna to become Krishna conscious then. Then you get eternal life. Actually, Prabhupada also said, if you have Krishna Katha, you know, very ecstatic Krishna Katha, like Bhagavatam question, Amaraj comes to hear. And then no one can die then. That's if you're giving a really good class and you just keep giving it for 10,000 years. You get a little long life. That's a secret for a long life. So anyway, so just have to go to Hanuman Kirtan for. Anyway, so what happened is that he died, and then when you die, then Yamaraj sort of yanks the soul, very, very tiny, 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, out of the body with the ropes of Bruna. Yamaraj personally came. Now, this is interesting also, because Yamaraj usually doesn't personally come. He usually sends his associates, known as the Yamadutas, to get us. Not the devotees. If you're wearing neckbeards and chanting, don't worry about it. The Vishnudutas will come for you. One interesting thing about dying and the Yamadutas, we had one devotee who would go on Sankirtan and she would ask morticians, what do people look like at the time of death? And they said, well, they look very peaceful at the time of death. And then she asked them, well, that's nowadays that you're using anesthesia. So what do they look like before, when people don't die under anesthesia? Do they have their eyes wide and scared? And the morticians started to shake because they were reminded about what people used to look like when they weren't drugged out when they died. Because the Yamadutas, they're interesting personalities. So so it was Yamaraj personally came, and he was taking the soul away and dragging the soul. And because of her piety, she was able to follow him. To see him, to see the soul, and to follow him. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, her chastity was just like so great. This is a famous story, Savitri and Satyavan. So she was following Yamaraj, and she followed him for 7 steps. Now there's some Vedic injunction that if you walk with someone for 7 steps, they're your friend, right? Like at the marriages, you actually have this like process of sapta, what do you call it, sapta grama, sampati or sapati, where you take 7 steps with your prospective husband and wife, and then you're considered eternally friends, or married. So Yamaraj said, you better go back, lady. And she said, I already took 7 steps with you. And he said, all right. What do you want? And they had some discussion. She was really philosophical, too. So she was able to basically have a nice philosophical discussion and please Yamaraj. And he said, all right, you're going to have a benediction. And your benediction is anything you want, but you can't have your husband back. That's not possible. You know, karma's finished. You know, look at the horoscope. So anyway, you can't have your husband back. So she said, all right, I want my blind father, who had been kicked out of his kingdom, to regain his sight. And he said, okay, Natasha. He can have his sight again. And so they kept walking, had another discussion, he was pleased, offered another benediction, same thing, that you can't have your husband back. And she said, I want my my father now is not blind, to regain his kingdom. And, all right. Okay. So now go back. He said, no. Such a nice philosophical discussion we're having. I like talking philosophy. So they kept walking, another philosophical discussion. Yamaraj was pleased. All right. Okay, lady. What do you want this time? And she said, I want my father, Ashwapati, who actually wanted a son. Remember the beginning of the story, he wanted a son. I want my father, Ashwapati, to have 100 sons. And Yamaraj said, okay. And can you go back right now? You know, we're almost in Yamaloka. You know, this is a long walk. And she said, she was so chased like this. And then she said, well, let's walk a little further. And finally he said, all right, one final benediction, but you can't have your husband back. Remember that. And then she said, okay, I just want 100 sons of my own by the semen of my husband. And without thinking, because he was so frustrated this time having to deal with this lady. He never experienced a lady following him to Yamaloka before. So he said, okay, now you go back. She said, I'll go back, but you got to give my husband back. He said, no. And she said, well, you said I got to have 100 sons by my husband. And he thought, yeah, I did say that. This lady tricked me. And so she got her husband back, and the husband, and Yamaraj gave them the benediction that they would live for 400 years after that. So their life was prolonged. Interesting, isn't it? Very, very interesting story about how the ladies are just like, so chased. So, get on to the next part. So how was this accomplished in the Vedic system? Now, I'll get to the modern system in a second, so don't worry. Before the end of the class. In the Vedic system, this was accomplished because when the girl was very young, she was married to the proper man by the arrangement of her parents, utilizing astrology. There's a plug for you. Utilizing astrology and common sense, too. And also considering people's nature, Gana, and all sorts of things like that they consider, because there was considerations like a person of the same caste should generally marry someone of the same caste, but a man of a higher caste can marry a woman of a lower caste, but generally a woman of a higher caste should marry a man of a lower caste, and it's prati loma. Anyway, there's all sorts of little considerations. Marriages really weren't arranged on the basis of what they call in India love marriages. We call them infatuation marriages. Because when people get married on the basis of infatuation, the scientists have actually analyzed through brain scans that it's has the same view in the MRI as someone who is snorting cocaine. In other words, when people are in love, you understand? Exactly the same. It looks exactly. They look at the brain scan and say, "She's in love." You know, when you're under the influence of intoxication, your sense of judgment is not so fantastic. Like you're not supposed to drive when you're under intoxication. Of course, don't take intoxication anyway. But as far as falling in love, it's not one of our regulated principles. No meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no falling in love. Can't, isn't it? So, that's a form of intoxication. Anyway, so, I'm not...
Now that
you've revealed it, I would make that one. Alright, yeah. Mara's in charge of he's in charge of every ministry on the GBC, and now it's going to be the house ministry. So therefore, they arranged marriages at that time. Now, I'm not suggesting arranged marriages now, but we're going to get to that in a second. So anyway, so the marriages were arranged, and the girl was married before she hit puberty. Because, it, you know, physiologically, and Prabhupada talks about this, that when the girl hits puberty, she's looking, this my husband, that my husband, and she can be cheated by different men. And of course, in this Kali Yuga, there's so many cheaters. And Prabhupada even mentioned that this whole point about, you know, women's liberation, the men are actually behind it, isn't it? Because as Prabhupada said, forgive me, but this is what Prabhupada said, he says, when milk is available freely in the marketplace, who will go to the trouble of keeping a cow, right? Prabhupada said that. So, you know, anyway, I think you understand what that means. Just like nowadays, people don't keep cows because you can just buy milk in the store. You know, if I tell you, you're keeping a cow, you gotta milk it every day, wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, instead of going to Mangalarti, you gotta be milking the cow, and at 5 o'clock, you gotta be milking the cow. Get it! I'm just going to the supermarket, it's a lot easier, and I can just work a job in the city, at the bank, right? That's easier than milking the cow. Actually, milking a cow is healthier than working at the bank. Anyway, that's another issue. So, I mean, just like in the Ramayana, does anyone know how young Sita Devi was when she got married? Any Ramayana scholars here?
Less than 13. No?
Less. Less.
Eight.
Less.
No.
Yeah. She was 6 years old. Not that there was a conjugal relationship, because it's mentioned in the Valmiki, I'm going by the Valmiki Ramayana. In the Valmiki Ramayana, it mentions that when Ram and Sita, I'm just doing some mathematics, Ram and Sita were exiled, or Ram was exiled, Sita followed him. Sita was 18, and they had been living in Ayodhya for 12 years at that time. The 12 years they lived, not together, believe me, it wasn't that the girl, the boy, you know, got, you know, together, living in the same place when the boy was... And when Ram, actually another thing is when Ram was taken by the sage to kill the Rakshasas, Visamrita Muni, he was 12 at that point. He was 12. So I mean, anyways, so if you read the Ramayana, because I read the Valmiki Ramayana like at least 20 times, and I listen to it every morning. So, of course, I'm not saying we should do that now. Please forgive me if anyone gets upset with me. But Prabhupada said when the girl came to puberty, she would know who her husband was. And that was fixed in her mind. And then she wouldn't think of anyone else but her, that particular person as her husband. So that was the tradition. Okay. So maybe we should go fast forward to the modern world. First of all, in the modern world, as Maharaj mentioned so nicely yesterday, that, you know, that men are not like Lord Ramchandra or Satchavan or Yudhisthira Maharaj. 99.99, or perhaps more decimal points than that, that men are not like it of that quality. And we find that sort of dedication is very difficult, or not even recommended, or impossible for someone to manifest in terms of the husband and wife. In many cases, I mean, there may be exceptions, because people have had experiences when they're young. As soon as you have an experience of some caregiver, whether it's a father or a husband or something like that, or who doesn't fulfill his obligations or her obligations properly, then it's very hard to trust people at that point. That's a psychological factor. You know, you find people who are psychologically abused, physically abused, neglected, which is a type of abuse. And it's very hard psychologically. I mean, we see that even in our society when someone takes shelter of someone else spiritually, not even talking about a marriage situation, and when there's misuse of authority, then it's hard to trust anyone at that point anymore, like fully at that point. So I'm not recommending this absolute trust, that one has. I do recommend it in one circumstance, which I'll get to in a second. And also, one shouldn't blindly follow in Kali Yuga. There's an example of this in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had a daughter, her name was Sati, and S-A-T-H-I, I believe. And his daughter was married to someone named Amoga. And Amoga had a problem. His problem was he was hypercritical of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would take prasadam at Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, and Amoga was looking for ways to criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya tried to keep him from even coming in or looking in the window or the door or something like that. And what happened is one time he looked in and he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was eating as much prasadam as like 10 men. And Lord Chaitanya thought it was quite interesting. He didn't take it so seriously. But Amoga got so angry, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya got so angry he started chasing Amoga with a stick as if to kill him. And Amoga, being much younger, was able to run away. But then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya felt very bad that this offense had been committed in his house. And he said that my daughter Sati is now, has no husband, basically. It's interesting, isn't it? Because this Amoga had committed an offense against the Supreme Personality of God in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here was an instance, he wasn't recommending this absolute chastity, that, you know, Sati should just follow her husband everywhere, even if he's an offender of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, I mean, it's a difficult thing to talk about, but it's also said that one is supposed to follow someone as long as they're not fallen. But then on the other hand, you have Prabhupada's sister who's serving her husband who's a drunkard and everything like that. And she remained chaste to him, and he actually became a devotee after some time because of her chastity. So, I mean, there's different instances. So there's a sense of discrimination one has to have. But what I learned from this particular story is that if someone becomes an offender to the Lord and to the Lord's devotees, then that person's associated, because that's the worst thing. If someone has just fallen, then that's one thing. Like I see in the case of Prabhupada, the only people I remember Prabhupada actually rejecting were people who were offenders. Like he had one so-called disciple, not a disciple, can't call a disciple, who actually started to offend Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur because he associated with some of the Babaji's and the followers of Lalit Prasad Thakur, who were, anyway, won't get into the story, who offended our branch of the disciplic succession, who offended Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in many ways. And this person is still offending Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on the internet to this day. And Prabhupada basically rejected him. He called him a snake, an envious snake. So in that case, there was rejection. But in the case of devotees who just had some spiritual difficulty, you don't really find Prabhupada rejecting those devotees. You know, Prabhupada would always welcome them back, regardless of what they did, and sometimes even give them a position to try to bring them back to their natural position. So, getting to the point of chastity in general, because I don't want to just dwell on, you know, the woman's position and everything like that. What I learned from these stories of chastity personally is that we need to inculcate this particular quality of relationship to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, and the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Because we may not have like husbands or wives who are on the level of Archie as a wife, or Yudhisthira as a husband, things like that. Although these marriages should be kept together. This is not what I'm advocating, to break up marriages. But our ultimate dedication, chastity, should be to Srila Prabhupada as the ultimate source of not only information, but inspiration and service for every member of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. I mean, we all have different spiritual masters. And of course, we do remain faithful to our spiritual masters while they're serving Prabhupada. You know, our spiritual master is dedicated to Prabhupada. But ultimately, you know, our focus should be on His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. And no matter what occurs to us in this Krishna consciousness movement, we should remain within the society, serving the society. I think that this is, for me, this is what chastity means. I mean, that's the ultimate lesson, is that we remain, and someone who leaves the society, and Prabhupada gave a very interesting statement one time. He said, anyone who thinks he can become Krishna conscious outside of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is living an hallucination. It's an interesting statement. Now, I take that as meaning not as a criticism of those who joined Krishna Consciousness in some other organization, but those who actually connected with Prabhupada, and then they broke that connection with Prabhupada by leaving Prabhupada's society. Because if you break the connection with Prabhupada, if you displease Prabhupada, then how can you make spiritual advancement? I mean, then it is like an hallucination. I mean, let's say you took initiation outside of Prabhupada's society with some other mouth. I'm not, that's something different. But if you leave Prabhupada's society, form your own society, to me that's an hallucination. I mean, I'm just looking at it from a scientific, you know, logical perspective. That Prabhupada is not pleased. I mean, what I do in my personal life, I try to do, I'm not perfect at it, is that when I make decisions in life about different things, I just think if Prabhupada was standing in front of me or sitting in front of me, what would Prabhupada say? You know, would Prabhupada say, do this, I'm pleased with you, or would Prabhupada say, you rascal, stop this nonsense? And that's my standard, because for me, the chastity, dedication, loyalty, because let's put chastity in a different word, loyalty to His divine grace of the Prabhupada is, you know, my very life and soul. And I'm sure it's the same with Maharaj and the devotees here. It's not just our life and soul. And we would rather die, just like Prabhupada gives the example in the fourth canto, part four, Srimad Bhagavatam, that the disciple, the spiritual master, should be prepared to die and leave his body, like the wife is prepared to leave her body and dedicate it to the husband, in the traditional culture, not today, of course. Today, sometimes the wife throws the husband in the fire. But we should be prepared. We should be prepared just to leave our body when the spiritual master passes away, if we're not capable or willing to carry out the mission of the spiritual master, is it? That's what Srimad Bhagavatam says. So that was my meditation when Prabhupada left the planet. And I read that, and that was the impetus for me actually taking sannyas, that dedication to Prabhupada. I said, you know, Prabhupada has left the planet. I just, sannyas to me meant the dedication for the rest of my life to Srila Prabhupada's mission. And it didn't mean getting more Mahaprasadam and more obeisances and all those other nice things sannyasis get. So anyway, so this is the real point that's important to me, the point of loyalty and chastity, and also to each other. You know, it's not only in a marriage situation, like a disciple should be loyal to the spiritual master, and the spiritual master should be loyal to the disciple. It's a two-way street. And we should be loyal to our friends. Just like, I mean, for example, we have the GBC and different devotees or my god brothers. And I just feel a great sense of loyalty to them. Like, Prahlad Nanda Maharaj, I feel a great sense of loyalty and friendship. I'm inspired by that. Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very inspiring. You know, it's just like, I just feel, you know, we're part of the same team. It's like being, I don't want to say it's be like members of a team, but anyway. It's a team, you know, and we just like, one for all and all for one. Like the, what is that, Three Musketeers or something? So anyway, so this is the point I'm making. So don't try to emulate this original Vedic culture. You men don't demand that your wife become like Archie. Unless you are capable of being like Prithu Maharaj. I don't think Baladev is like Printer Maharaj. It's not so bad, but he's not like Printer Maharaj. So any questions or comments? I don't want to go on too long. Maharaj, you want to? Anybody else have any arguments about these things? Yeah.
It's not only concerned about the female, but also for the men.
Yeah.
Should we at least try to aspire to get some qualities of the man or wife that culture?
Yeah. As far as in the marriage situation is your question, right? In the marriage situation, you're supposed to protect the wife. Protect, maintain, see to her needs. Of course, in the Vedic culture also you had extended families, which made things a little bit easier. Extended family means you had not only your wife was there, but your parents were there. Things are quite difficult now because if you have a child, of course your wife's mother is there, so that helps a lot. Then it's a strain on the family, like even have a child, because the child wakes up early in the morning, not only early in the morning, all throughout the night. So the Vedic culture was traditional family, so you had so much help, counseling. Now we have to have programs like we're talking about, grahastha ministries, counseling for the grahasthas when they start to fight. But traditionally that was done in the village or the family culture. And the interesting thing about in the villages, when people live in the villages, people consider each other to be brothers and sisters. Like it's very interesting when I talk to some of the devotees from India, they'll introduce me to someone and say, oh, this is my brother, this is my sister. And I find out they're just from the same village. But the relationship is so close, so loving. I mean, so we have a big village here, you know, ISKCON village. And we should have these close relationships and really help each other since we don't have the normal extended families. Devotees should participate to help each other in not only household life and any sort of thing, you know, loving exchanges, revealing the mind and confidence, sharing prasadam, just like in the last few days I've been going over different devotees' homes for prasadam, and it's very nice, you know, so we're family. I'm trying to inculcate that mood in devotees as I travel. We're at ISKCON, we're actually a family. And we're all brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, whatever, nephews, cousins, grandparents. No one's ever called me their grandpa yet. Anyway, thank God. So, we're all family. So this is actually important. So, so the husband should be very protective of his wife. I mean, many, many things. No yelling, please. No yelling at the wife. That's an order. So any other questions? Or comments or arguments? Any of the ladies? No, I mean, like I said, don't be scared. You don't have to. The whole savitri and such a fun. But there's principles behind who they are, and those principles are what we need to imbibe. It's not so much the letter of the law; it's the spirit of the law. That spirit of loyalty and dedication. Right? We stick with people. Stick with this ISKCON forever. All right, I think we have to end now. All glory is to the congregation. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. His grace Ananda Prabhu Ki Jai.